Warning, the podcast you are about to hear is often based on true events and people. It chronicles the dialogue and actions of random, anonymous, obnoxious, self-entitled, unintelligent, self-centered idiots, attention whores, ignoramuses, dolts, clods, nimrods, douches, weirdos, drama queens, overly sensitive crybabies, and people who think they are better, more important, and more special than the rest of us. In other words, amateurs. It's Amateur Nation with Lou Santini. We call attention to and call out the amateurs, the people who are doing life wrong, the speed bumps of life, the people that are in your way every day, the unintelligent, obnoxious, attention-whoring, self-entitled drama queen victim types who chip away at the moments of your life due to no self-awareness, common sense, manners, or social skills, and are disturbing the flow of the pros. Hi, Mom.
Oh, hey, Lou.
Amateur Nation, it's not just a podcast, it's a movement. Welcome to episode 88, the quarantine doy common sense episode. All right, so go to Amazon to download my book. It's called Amateur Nation, The Decline of Common Sense, Manners, and Social Skills, the second edition, where the book is on sale at 45% off until the nationwide quarantine is 100% lifted. You can email me at lou@lousantini.com, or you can call the Amateur Nation hotline, 818-351-9263 for your comments and questions. And while you're at it, feel free to subscribe to my YouTube page. Okay, so I'm back from a week off after visiting Mom in Ohio for Mother's Day for 10 days. It was great to get out of Los Angeles and all that warm, sunny weather to Ohio, where in just 10 days, I experienced 76 degrees and sunny, rain, a freeze warning, and yes, even a trace of snow on one of the days. That is the Ohio I remember. Had a great visit and had a chance to help Mom get her house ready for spring, did some minor home improvement stuff, get my hands and mind busy and off the debacle that is happening all around us, and more importantly, spend some much-needed quality time with Mom for Mother's Day. Now, as always, just like my book title refers to, this show is never, has never, and will never be about politics. Just good old common sense and logic. This particular episode is devoted to that, common sense. It's going to be chock full of it. All I ask is that just for this episode, whether you're Republican or Democrat, liberal or conservative, and I don't judge your leanings either way, I'm just saying forget all that and just hear some common sense regarding this quarantine. Here's what's happening in Amateur Nation. Topic number one. Strap yourself in. Let's talk common sense regarding air travel. And in particular, my travels going from Los Angeles to Cleveland. Now, normally, I would fly direct nonstop from LA to Cleveland. But due to the pandemic, United Airlines, and don't forget their motto, we bought Continental Airlines' highest customer satisfaction ratings and managed to fuck it up, had me go from LA to Houston, then Houston to Cleveland. On the way back, it was Cleveland to Washington, D.C., then to Los Angeles. Now look, while I expected less travelers, of course, and some adaptation to the pandemic, which I will never call or live by the words, the new normal that's being force-fed to us, in my travels, I was appalled by the lack of three things: logic, common sense, and most importantly, consistency of policy and practices when it comes to the pandemic and things like social distancing, washing your hands, sanitary conditions, wearing masks, etc. I have a ritual of always buying a newspaper so I have something to read on the plane. I don't like to use my computer on flights unless I'm writing this podcast. I come up with a topic idea and I want to jot some stuff down, or if I'm writing new comedy material. I get enough internet in my life without having it interrupt air travel. I kind of like the break away from phones and the quiet away from the internet and the spawn of Satan, social media. So I go to the famous Hudson News that you see in just about every airport in the United States, and I go to their stand. No newspapers. Literally everything else is in stock. Magazines, food, snacks, bottled beverages, even hand sanitizer, right? But apparently USA Today and or the LA Times is the leading cause of the coronavirus. Whatever, iPod and or a nap it is. Now, before I left LA, I'm told by United Airlines that, quote, when you arrive in Texas, anyone who has Texas as their final destination will have to fill out paperwork declaring that they will self-quarantine for 14 days. Okay, how do you plan on monitoring that? What, the honor system? Good luck with that. Problem number one. Also, they said, quote, masks must be worn to get on the plane, which they could provide you with if you did not have one. However, they also said Los Angeles Airport required them, and when I arrived at LAX, easily 50% of the people, myself included, were not wearing them. Now, I had one at the ready in my carry-on bag, but if I ain't gotta wear it, I ain't wearing it. So, we fly to Houston, maybe 9 people on the 1 hour and 21 minute flight, not a single passenger wearing masks. All right, I get it, small plane, we're all spread apart, but still, you got the crew, the flight attendants, the pilots, no one's wearing masks. All right, whatever. Also, no hot beverages, no ice for cold drinks, no meals, and no in-flight magazines. I might be the only person who actually reads those in-flight magazines because, frankly, while most of it is crap, every now and then I find a nugget to use on the show or something interesting that I wouldn't normally read about anywhere else. But they literally announced, quote, for your safety, the Hemisphere magazines are removed. Whatever. I guess you get a paper cut, someone sneezes onto your knuckle, you die on the spot. Touch the seat, the tray, the room temperature bottled water we give you, the fan, the light above your seat, the recline button, the seatbelt. But those magazines are certain death. No logic, no common sense. What the fuck ever. All right, so I exit the jetway, and within one step off the jetway into the airport, I'm met by 4 armed guards wearing masks, separating us into 2 lines. Those staying in Texas, who apparently have to self-quarantine for 14 days and fill out paperwork, and those, like me, going to other gates for connecting flights. Now, I, of course, was not staying in Texas, so I just start to head to my next gate. A guard puts his arm in front of me. Whoa, 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 where are you going? Cleveland, I tell him. He says, are you crew? Now, really? You know, as a comedian with a sharp tongue, you know how hard it is to not mouth off? I'm in jeans, a pullover, and a light brown leather jacket with sneakers. Watching my mouth, as I'm always respectful to police, I bit my tongue and gave him a look like, did you really just ask me that question if I'm with the crew? But I told him I was connecting to Cleveland, and he asked to see my boarding pass on my phone. Here comes more of the lack of consistency of protocol and procedure. As I walk to the next gate, I stumble upon 4 more guards / police, all in uniform, just like the guys who greeted me when I got off the plane, having lunch all at the same 4 top table at the only restaurant open in the airport, a Wendy's hamburger joint, laughing it up, none wearing masks. All right, so you could argue, well, Lou, they're eating, they can't wear their masks. All right, what happened to the social distancing then? I mean, if they're going to eat, shouldn't they eat far apart? They can take their masks off and eat far apart for safety? Whatever. I fly to Cleveland on a slightly larger plane with about 24, 25 people. Half of them wearing masks, the other not. Me included. Half the crew is wearing masks, the other half isn't. And the crew that is wearing masks have them below their noses or simply hanging from their necks. Yeah, this is serious. Now here's a sidebar, and this is quite funny. I go to use the restroom between connecting flights. It's just me and one other guy at the urinals, of course, and we're doing the standard 3 urinals buffer apart that men do, and that's even pre-quarantine. That's just standard man procedure. Now, coincidentally, we finish at the urinals almost at the same time, and when he zips up, I notice he's wearing black rubber gloves. Now, keep in mind, it's a motion sensor urinal. You don't even need to touch a handle or pull a handle to flush that toilet. But he zips up, takes off his rubber gloves, and tosses them into the trash. So what, now you don't trust your own dick? Did your dick get coughed on during your last flight? Whatever. Now, flying home was one of the worst traveling experiences of all time. The flight from Cleveland to Washington, D.C. was just a simple 41-minute flight with about 15 people, so how bad could it be? It was kind of uneventful. Washington, D.C. to Los Angeles, however, horrific. People kept texting me the next day, how was your flight? Everyone got the same reply, horrific. Now, we had the same issues as we had before when I flew from LA to Cleveland in regards to not having any food besides, you know, with the tiny bag of pretzels, no deadly magazines, no ice, no hot beverages. That means coffee and tea, no alcohol. Hey, I thought alcohol killed COVID. It's then hand sanitizer. No movie screens, just 5.5 hours of dry, acrid air with nothing to do, nothing to read or view unless you watched a movie or surfed the net on your own personal device. Now, my batteries were dying, and I actually forgot to pack my charger from my mom's house, so that's my own fault, but not the point. Luckily, I had a magazine that I purchased, but again, no newspapers at the newsstands in Washington. As the clerk told me, honey, we haven't had a newspaper for 2 months. Explain to me how newspapers are more deadly than magazines. And please use science and or logic. I can touch everything in that store, but not a newspaper. So this part of my trip, returning from Cleveland to LA, I'm told that masks must be worn in the Cleveland airport. Well, I literally was the only one going through security. I'm TSA pre-approved, but that didn't even matter. I was the only person in the Cleveland airport leaving at that time, so I basically skipped wearing a mask. Why? I'm the only person there. More than half of the TSA crew were not wearing them. The flight from Cleveland to Washington, same story. Even the pilots greeting us upon boarding were not wearing masks. We're told upon landing in Washington, masks are necessary. I'd estimate about 25% of the passengers weren't wearing them, and for the first time during the whole trip, the airport actually was a little crowded, and frankly, I was thankful. I was happy to see people walking around. And yes, they were not standing 6 feet apart. You can't do that. That's physically impossible. No one would get anywhere to space, especially if you're traveling with another person or in a group. People are going to walk near each other. It's going to happen. Since I was told there would be no meal service on the flight from Washington to LA, I grabbed a turkey wrap, a quarter can of Pringles chips, and an iced tea to the tune of just shy of $14. Ah, the airport prices. Whatever, I need to eat. Luckily, I brought some protein bars to take the edge off. Now, we're told that we must wear masks on the plane, and if we don't have one, United Airlines will provide one. Well, if the rule is mandatory, how do we get into Washington Airport to begin with? Whatever. Now, the nice woman at check-in asks if I have a mask. I did, but I'll always take anything free from airlines, even if it's oppressive. I'll take it, right? So I take the mask, and I make no effort to put it on, and she says nothing. Here comes the dumbest, most illogical inconsistency in protocol yet. The flight from Washington to LA is just shy of 5.5 hours. This is important. Listen, the flight was 90% full. Again, happy to see people traveling. Maybe 5 to 10 empty seats on the flight. Now, I'm an aisle guy, and the center seat next to me happened to be empty. Bonus, I had not worn my mask for easily the first 3 hours of that flight. I didn't wear it in the Washington airport. I didn't wear it when I boarded the plane. I didn't have it on for the first 3 hours of the flight. So I go up to use the restroom, and clearly someone told on me, because when I returned to my seat, a flight attendant came to me politely and said that I needed to wear it. I'm respectful, but said, well, I haven't worn it for the first 3 hours. The guy in the last row by the bathroom isn't wearing his, and literally the guy next to me in the window seat is not wearing his. But to get her off my back, I put it on. The second she left, off it went. So every time this micromanaging flight attendant walked by me, I just make like I'm taking a drink of my room temperature water, and I never heard from her again. I know, I'm a mass murderer, a common name the maskers love to throw around. Finally, as we begin our descent into Los Angeles, the flight attendant announces this, quote, "For your safety and social distancing, we ask that you not stand up until your row is called. Keep in mind, I'm in row 27. Whatever. A few minutes go by, and then she revises it. She says, we will be excusing you 5 rows at a time, starting at the front of the plane. Whatever. We land, we all hear that ding, and like good sheep, stay planted in our seats. Now, I can't be sure, but I've concluded that this was not a plane policy, nor a United Airlines policy, but a power-hungry, uppity flight attendant who played Mother May I too much as a kid, and then announced, at this time, rows 1 through 8 are excused. Okay, that's not five rows, but whatever. Then, apparently failing math in school after announcing rows 1 through 8, announces, and now rows 10 through 27. Apparently, she shit-canned the five at a time nonsense because at this rate, we'll be on the plane until the next day. Here's the problem I have with inconsistency of protocol and lack of logic. They're so concerned for our safety with the social distancing, but you have no problem selling the plane to 90% capacity? Oh, what, the masks saved us? Guess what, idiots? Not all of us wore them. We're told to take them off to eat or drink. And guess what? No one's taking a bite of their pretzels, putting their mask back on and chewing, pulling the mask back down, putting another pretzel in their mouth, putting the mask back on, taking the cap off their bottled water, putting their mask down, putting the... Come on. Once you start eating and drinking and the mask is off, you're leaving it off until you're done eating or drinking. We were told to take our masks off to eat or drink. That sounds logical. Then they excuse us five rows at a time, initially, to help with social distancing. That is the most laughable shit ever. We're crammed in like sardines for well over 5.5 hours with no food, stale, dry air, while wearing masks that indeed make you cough and sneeze, and not standing up at the same time is what saves lives. So sitting next to each other equals living, standing equals death. Laughable. Whatever. Now let's address the extra measures United is taking to keep the restrooms clean and sanitized. In addition to asking us to not line up near the bathroom, all right, how am I supposed to know if there's a line without getting up and walking at least halfway down the plane? I can't just turn around and look and tell who's in line for the bathroom and who's just sitting in their seats. And if there is someone ahead of me, what? I go to the restroom, oh, there's a person in front of me. Walk back to my seat, try my luck again, and lose my place in line? Fail. And I get it, you can't have like 10 people lined up for the restroom, but my point is valid. Now, since everyone is afraid to touch everything, no joke, I can see visible shoe prints on the flush button and the baby changing station, and water and soap is everywhere, paper towels everywhere, because no one wants to put their hand on the little tension spring lid that handles all the garbage. So now everyone's trying to urinate, use the bathroom, handle the toilet. They're using their foot to open the toilet seat, using their foot to close it, using their foot to flush. They're using elbows to use the faucets. They're trying to grab paper towels without touching the thing. And it's just a disaster. Way cleaner. Good job. Makes sense. Don't tell me masks are helping, are mandatory, and social distancing is critical. While, of course, the virus is real, and people are dying and sick, and it's a serious virus, I can't believe that I have to state that I'm sympathetic. If it was so dangerous, why allow a plane to sail at 90% capacity? Why allow seating where people are right next to each other? Yes, we were separated on my flight from Cleveland to Houston and Houston to Cleveland, but those were smaller planes, way less people. But this was a full Washington flight. Why are you even selling that many seats if you're that concerned for our safety? Because you want that fucking money, that's why. Why allow snacks but not meals? The meals are always sealed, just like the snacks. You don't get a plate of food on China. I mean, even if you're in first class, it's still protected somewhat. The meals you buy in coach, in economy class, and business class, they come pre-wrapped and you gotta open them up, or they're wrapped in plastic, or they have a lid on them. Just like the pretzels and the Oreo cookies and those disgusting waffle blech, things that they hand out that no one ever wants to eat in real life. Why no ice? The flight attendants wear gloves and masks, both of which are supposed to be our saviors here and our level of protection. If this was so deadly serious, then flying would not be allowed at all, period. That is the essence of an enclosed space with more than 10 people in it. We can't go to the beach, open air, vitamin D, sunshine, with plenty of ability to spread apart and stay in groups of less than 10, but you're going to cram 220 people literally inches apart on a plane? And if you reply, well, Lou, people have to travel, they don't have to go to the beach, I call bullshit. It can't be deadly and serious in Washington, but meh, LA, Cleveland, Houston, not so much. It can't be serious to police at the gate, but not for police down the hall at Wendy's. I've never been a conspiracy theory guy, and that's not what this show is about. That's not what this episode is about. But the old saying goes, rules are rules, right? Supposedly, we keep hearing doctors quoting science and bombarding us with math and stats. Go behind the numbers. How many people die who have underlying health issues? How old were they? How many were obese and/or have heart disease, which is the number one killer in the United States? The United States being the fattest country on earth. I know this sounds callous and cold. I'm not without sympathy and feeling. I'm trying to use logic and common sense. But you can't let people shop at Walmart, but not the mom-and-pop local store. You can't let people stay indoors breathing stale Walmart air, but not warm, sunshiny outdoor air at our nation's beaches where people are spread out. Common sense. And if you're wondering how is this amateur, Lou? How is this amateur nation? It's stupid and obnoxious. And per the rules I laid out in episode one and in my book, two factors of that equation, stupid plus obnoxious times rude divided by entitled plus inconsiderate. And you got two of them here, stupid and obnoxious. Two factors are enough to be amateur. I stated that in episode one and in my book. And no, it's not science, but it's just the equation I go with to discover and find out what is amateur. And this whole diatribe is, when it comes to wearing masks and social distancing, it needs to be consistent across the board. If it's that bad, no public transportation, no buses, no airplanes, shut them down. Shut them down. If it can't be serious in one, well, you go by population. You can't use that argument because then while New York is getting hit the hardest, explain to me why less populated states and cities are still dealing with the same nonsense. And to be fair, if you choose to stay indoors and wear your masks, I respect that, because that's your choice. You're not an amateur for doing what's right for you, but you, the amateur, don't get to choose what's right for me. Especially when you have no logic, science, or common sense to back it up. And stay tuned for three pro things, because you're going to hear the opposite of this true personal travel debacle that I went through. And that is a sentiment full of common sense and logic. It answers all the issues that I talked about in this topic. Now, for those people say, yeah, well, you know what? You'd care about this if you or someone you cared about got the coronavirus. That is not the correct response to this argument. It's not even in line with what I talked about. Of course I would care if I got the coronavirus. Of course I would care if someone got it. It wouldn't change my logic and common sense and wearing masks and social distancing. What? If I get the coronavirus, you're going to go, see, Lou, you should have worn your mask. No. It's a risk. It's a gamble. A very, very small gamble. The response, if you're going to say, well, you'd care if you got it or someone you cared about, that would work if I said the words, I don't care about the coronavirus and the coronavirus is not real. Then you could get to say that. But that response cannot be an all-encompassing response just because it sounds succinct and powerful. It does not sum up and answer all arguments when it comes to quarantine procedure. Also, if you're saying to yourself, oh, poor baby, didn't get a whiskey and a movie on a flight. Hey, amateurs, I wasn't on vacation. All right, yeah, I visited my mom for Mother's Day because, frankly, I didn't know if the Emperor of California would be allowing interstate travel anytime soon, since he clearly is a power-mad, illogical amateur himself. Not everyone traveling is on vacation, especially now. No one's going on vacation right now. Why would you? Nothing's open. People have businesses to run, funerals to attend, weddings and other family obligations to attend. No one gets on a plane just to go for a ride. This isn't like going for a drive in your car on a Sunday afternoon, especially for a small, cramped, uncomfortable seat with no food at $600, no decent meal, no entertainment, not even a cup of coffee, just so we can drive a car after being silenced and starved for nearly 6 hours. And if you say, oh, well, if it's so shitty, don't travel then, Lou, not an argument. My logic and common sense trumps your lame response. I have a life to live. I'm trying to live it. If you want me to wear the mask, I will wear it, as long as the rules and procedure and protocol are consistent and make sense. Get out of the pros way. Say it with me. Doi. Topic number two. We all know my stance and the belief that most pros have in that social media, emails, texting, FaceTime, etc. are a way to communicate, but know that nothing beats face-to-face human interaction and contact. Those are substitutes for pros in their communication, not replacements for communication. As a comedian, over the last 2.5 months, I have been offered several times to perform virtual comedy shows. I will not. Ever. You know why? That's not stand-up comedy. Stand-up comedy, for Christ's sake, the word stand-up is in it. Right? I'm sitting down at my desk with my background behind me? No. Stand-up comedy is, indeed, an art. Jazz and stand-up comedy are the only two art forms invented by the United States, by the way. Comedians, well, good ones anyway, make stand-up comedy look easy. Stand-up comedy is not simply reciting your jokes. In a mere, say, 7-minute spot, a showcase spot, here's what a comedian analyzes and goes through, and these are just some of the things. They watch the comedians before him or her to see what the crowd is liking. They adjust their set, maybe a set they worked on for weeks, accordingly. They make changes at the last minute, the last second, on the fly. They watch the room to see where the hot spots are and also anything they might be able to comment upon and get a laugh. While they're on stage, they're changing their set literally as they're talking. Try doing that. Have a conversation, a good conversation, a meaningful, not small talk. Hey, how's the weather? How's it going? How you doing? How about them Lakers? No, no. Have a meaningful conversation with a point while thinking of something else to say and changing the subject mid-sentence. Now do that while trying to be funny, not amusing, serious laughs in front of a paying crowd who came to see you and paid admission and fought traffic and paid for gas and bought 2 drink minimums. A comedian also has to read a crowd's body language and energy. They react to a person's laugh or smile in the front row. They react to outside stimuli that they might be able to incorporate. They pause when the laughs are strong. They move on quickly when they don't get the laugh they want. They choreograph their movements to coincide with certain points of bits, playing to one side of the room or another. They're watching the light so they don't go over their time for the next comedian. They deal with people texting, getting up to go to the bathroom, ordering food, having food and drinks brought to tables. They're asking audiences questions and doing crowd work. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, and that's just in a 5 to 7 minute showcase set. I'm not complaining, not one bit. I love that. I miss that. I love the challenge of it. But that's the art of it. That's just some of the things a true comedian does and analyzes during a set. The longer the set, the rules and strategies change. They use their facial expressions, their body language, their physicality, their mic technique, their voice, tone, texture, and of course, timing and inflection. As I've often said, comedy is half art, half science. Zoom kills the art. I'm no trained monkey here to amuse you with my reciting of my jokes that I've pained over and crafted only to be easily muted or ignored via Zoom. I won't have my art reduced to a FaceTime chat. Pass. Now, this article from the BBC.com entitled "The Reason Zoom Calls Drain Your Energy." The article says, "Video chat is helping us stay employed and connected, but what makes it so tiring and how can we reduce Zoom fatigue?" Isn't that sad that that phrase even exists? The article says, "Your screen freezes. There's a weird echo. A dozen heads stare at you. There are the work huddles, the one-on-one meetings, and then, once you're done for the day, the hangouts with friends and family." BBC Work Life spoke to, this is definitely an Italian name, Giampiero Petrellieri. I hope I'm saying that right. He's an associate professor at a company called INSEAD, I-N-S-E-A-D, who explores sustainable learning and development in the workplace, and Marissa Schuffler, an associate professor at Clemson University, who studies workplace well-being and teamwork effectiveness, to hear their views. "Being on a video call requires more focus than a face-to-face chat," says Petrellieri. "Video chats mean we need to work harder to process nonverbal cues like facial expressions, the tone and pitch of the voice, body language. Paying more attention to these consumes a lot of energy." He says, "Our minds are together when our bodies feel we're not. That dissonance, which causes people to have conflicting feelings, is exhausting. You cannot relax into the conversation naturally. Delays on phone or conferencing systems of 1.2 seconds made people perceive the responder as less friendly or focused." Silence is another challenge, he adds. Silence creates a natural rhythm in real-life conversation. However, when it happens in a video call, you become anxious about the technology. It also makes people uncomfortable. One 2014 study by German academics showed that delays on the phone or a conferencing system shaped our views of people negatively. Even delays of 1.2 seconds made people perceive the responder as less friendly or focused. An added factor, says Shuffler, is that if we are physically on camera, we are very aware of being watched. When you're on a video conference, you know everybody's looking at you. You're on stage, so there comes the social pressure and feeling like you need to perform. Being performative is nerve-wracking and more stressful. The article says it's also very hard for people not to look at their own face if they can see it on screen or not to be conscious of how they behave in front of the camera. Then the article asks the question, how are the current circumstances with the pandemic contributing to this? Petrillieri believes the fact that we feel forced into these calls may be a contributory factor. The video call is our reminder of the people we have lost temporarily. It is the distress that every time you see someone online, such as your colleagues, that reminds you we should really be in the workplace together, he says. Then there's the fact that aspects of our lives that used to be separate, work, friends, and family, are all now happening in the same space. He says, imagine if you go into a bar and in the same bar you talk with your professors, meet your parents, or a date. Isn't that weird? But when I'm Zooming my friends, for example, shouldn't that relax me? The article says. Lots of us are doing big group chats for the first time, whether it's cooking and eating a virtual Easter dinner, attending a university catch-up, or holding a birthday party for a friend. If the call is meant to be fun, why might it feel tiring? Part of it, says Shuffler, is whether you're joining in because you want to or because you feel you ought to, like a virtual happy hour with colleagues from work. If you see it as an obligation, that means more time that you're on as opposed to getting a break. A proper chat with friends will feel more social and there will be less Zoom fatigue from conversations where you've had a chance to just be yourself. The article goes on to say big group calls can feel particularly performative, Petrillieri warns. People like watching television because you can allow your mind to wander. But a large video call, quote, is like you're watching television and television is watching you. So, how can we alleviate Zoom fatigue? The article says both experts suggest limiting video calls to those that are necessary. Turning on the camera should be optional, and in general, there should be more understanding that cameras do not always have to be on throughout each meeting. Having your screen off to the side instead of straight ahead could also help your concentration, particularly in group meetings, says Petrillieri. It makes you feel like you're in an adjoining room, so may be less tiring. In some cases, it's worth considering if video chats are really the most efficient option. When it comes to work, Shuffler suggests shared files with clear notes can be a better option that avoids information overload. She also suggests taking time during meetings to catch up before diving into business. Spend some time to actually check into people's well-being, she urges. It's a way to reconnect us with the world and to maintain trust and reduce fatigue and concern. Now here comes the funny. And maybe, says Petrillieri, if you want to reach out, go old school. Write a letter to someone instead of meeting them on Zoom. Tell them you really care about them. Ha ha ha, Lou said, because we know that'll never happen, will it, amateurs? Social media, it's awful. Say it with me. Doi. Topic number 3. Here's a statement. I guarantee no one has ever said nor thought during the quarantine and the pandemic. You ready? It's from thecut.com, and I quote, how Chloe Sevigny is getting through quarantine. This is where you say, who the fuck is Chloe Sevigny? Answer, she gave an on-camera unsimulated blowjob to the director and star of the movie, and I use that term loosely, of a movie that no one ever saw that was critically panned called The Brown Bunny. Yes, I know she was in Kids, which was a ballsy, gritty, honest, good movie. I know she was also in Boys Don't Cry. But my point is, during the pandemic, broke people, struggling people, collars both blue and white, are worried, stressed, and anxious. But here we have another amateur celebrity needing attention, and her publicist seeing that the major stars are smartly remaining silent and out of the limelight while us normies suck it and cope, decides, I need attention. And the article that I won't dignify to read or waste your time to read from has the subtitle that says, The New York City Actress on Sexting, Matcha, and How Her Life Has Changed as She's About to Become a Mom, as she poses with her bare ass facing the camera. How much fucking attention do you need? Really, you're going to talk about sexting, matcha tea, and motherhood, and how this affects you during the quarantine while posing naked. Like, why do those three topics exist as part of this conversation about quarantine? Sexting, matcha tea, and becoming a mom. And this is supposed to be how she's coping with the quarantine. How is she coping? I'm guessing without financial worry and minimal stress, and also while naked. Do you see how amateur behavior is just another very real mental virus that has infected people of all races, ages, sexes, backgrounds, religions, politics, levels of wealth, etc. I had several friends email me this and text it to me asking if I saw it. I, of course, did. I saw the article online. I can barely speak at the level of, who was asking this? How is Chloe Sevigny coping with quarantine? You'll never convince me that anyone was thinking of Chloe Sevigny during the pandemic or ever. I'm not saying she doesn't deserve happiness. I'm not wishing anything bad on her. I'm not saying she's not a good actress. She might be a solid citizen, but she's no pro, that's for sure. Say it with me. Doi! Time now for 60 seconds. Start the timer. You know, between the coronavirus, the murder hornets, the unemployment and ensuing depression, spousal abuse, rise in suicides, depression and anxiety that arose from it, I dub 2020 the year of fear. Twitter, come for the porn, leave for the censorship. Dear Capital One, what's in my wallet? Really? Currently, a moth. Some good news finally, though. My dentist is open back up on May 18th. Now to control this boner. They actually said in the email they sent to me announcing their reopening, please don't bring a guest to your appointment. Yeah, so like you're a guy asking out a woman, so I was wondering, would you do me the honor of accompanying me to my cleaning? God, do I hate fucking stupidity. It's right up there with laziness and weakness, and this year is chock full of it. So that being said, let's switch gears, get happy, and take a look at three pro things. Three things that are done right. Number one. As always, no politics, just logic regarding the shutdown of our country. Now I read to you exactly, word for word, a post that I stumbled upon from a friend of a friend via Facebook. This is not news, so don't ask me to check for accuracy. There's nothing fact-based in it. There are no politics. There are no Republicans or Democrats, liberals or conservatives. There are no sides, just common sense and logic. I will not embellish, edit, or change any of the words. I will, to merely give it context, tell you that it was written by someone I don't know who lives in Ohio, my home state, but this could apply to literally any city, state, or country in the world. This is another great example that illustrates the difference between cautious versus irrational. Remember topic number one and the inconsistencies and policy and protocol that I encountered in my travels? Listen carefully, and I quote. There are those wanting to reopen Ohio, yet they're being classified as selfish. There are those that rely on all kinds of people to supply them while they cower in fear at home. Isn't that being selfish too? You expect your garbage to be picked up. You expect the grocery store to be open so you can get milk. You expect truck drivers to supply the stores. You expect farmers, meat packers, fruit and vegetable pickers all to keep food in that grocery store. You expect Amazon to still ship all the things you're ordering while you sit at home shopping. You expect the delivery driver to leave it on your doorstep. You expect your phone to work, your power to stay on, and your mail to show up, rain, sleet, or shine. And most importantly, you expect the doctors and nurses to be there if you need them. The whole premise of shelter in place is based on the arrogant idea that others must risk their health so you can protect yours. There is nothing virtuous about ignoring the largely invisible army required to allow people to shelter in place. I know there are some of you that are screaming mad about what I just said, but stop and really think about what is allowing you to stay safe in your home. I truly believe that with some common sense on my part, I could easily go back to life as it was. I want to go to restaurants. I want to shop at the little store just up the road. And yes, I could catch COVID-19. I could also catch the flu or a cold. I could get run over by a bus. I could get struck by lightning. We take risks every day. If you choose to stay home, that is absolutely your choice. And please don't start screaming at me about how I'll just spread it. Why are you worried? You won't get it because you're staying in your home. Are you going to shelter in place every time a new strand of the flu happens? Our economy can't withstand much more of this. If our economy collapses, so will the rest of the world. If that happens, you will see the rise of tyrants. I absolutely don't want people to die from COVID or anything else. I want people to live. But sheltering in place is not living. Now, if you heard all that post that I read from an anonymous source on Facebook, and you replied, well, they're just trying to save lives, or, well, better safe than sorry. You may have heard what I just read, but you didn't listen. Cautious versus irrational. Say it with me. Doi. Number two. We kind of touched upon this a few episodes ago, but this is especially for the men. But listen carefully, ladies. If you got a man in your life, help him out. So it's from menshealth.com, the article that says, six things that happen to your body when you don't have sex for a while. And is it true that if you don't use it, you lose it? Actually, yes, in a manner of speaking, the article says. Now that social distancing is the new norm, a lot of folks are going a long time without having sex. And this isn't just true of people quarantining alone. The Kinsey Institute is currently conducting an ongoing study called Sex and Relationships in the Time of COVID-19, and one of the lead researchers, Justin Laymiller, PhD, provided some preliminary data in Psychology Today. Apparently, 44% of participants said their sex life had declined recently, while 30% said the same of their romantic life. Even though many individuals are spending more time at home with their partners than ever before, they're not feeling particularly sexual, which makes sense. It can be difficult to feel sexually connected to your partner with everything that's going on in the world. The article says this lack of sex and intimacy is bad for a couple of reasons. One, sex is fun. You should be having much of it as you can. And two, we're all missing out on the many well-documented emotional and physical health benefits of having sex regularly. These benefits could really improve our mental health as COVID-19 progresses. But what actually happens to your body when you don't have sex for a long time? Here are six of the most surprising side effects. Number one, your rhythm gets thrown off the next time you have sex. You know the old expression, if you don't use it, you lose it? Science suggests that to a degree that might be true. On an intellectual level, navigating all those arms and legs and erogenous zones can get pretty confusing. So imagine trying to navigate the core mechanics of intercourse after months and months of not having sex at all. Luckily, there's an easy solution. Even if you don't have a partner, the research suggests ejaculating regularly can help alleviate some of these effects. Number two, if you don't masturbate, your risk of prostate cancer goes up. If you're not masturbating at all, research says that's not healthy. In fact, multiple studies have pointed to the conclusion that high ejaculation frequency, meaning 4.6 to 7 times a week, is linked to a lower risk of prostate cancer. So get out those baby wipes and turn on Pornhub for the sake of your own health. Number three, your blood pressure could spike. Without sex, you may notice an increase in blood pressure. A 2006 study in the medical journal Biological Psychology found that people who were having regular sex had lower levels of blood pressure than those who weren't. The researchers concluded that having sex more frequently actually improves your body's physiological response to stress. Speaking of which, number four, when you don't have as much sex, you get more stressed out. The article says a great night of lovemaking, can make literally everything else in the world feel better. Even if your boss won't stop breathing down your neck, or if you're under a bunch of deadlines, you're consistently getting laid, so all of that stuff seems super manageable. Apparently, there's a scientific reason for that. Neuroscientist Dr. Deborah W. So said in an interview with Men's Health that during orgasm, endorphins are released that can help to improve your mood. So if you tend to use sex as a way of coping with stress, a dry spell that we're all going through right now can be doubly frustrating. I know one of you went and said, hey, not all of us. Good for you. And shut up. Number five, your immune system gets weaker when you have less sex. The article says, orgasms are incredibly beneficial to your immune system, as psychologists Carl Charnetsky and Francis Brennan Jr. found. They conducted a study where they asked patients who were having sex once or twice a week to provide saliva samples. Those samples were found to contain an extremely high concentration of the common cold-busting antibody immunoglobulin A. That's a big one. Number six, your performance at work might slip. Keith Leavitt, an associate professor at Oregon State University, found that couples with an active sex life were much happier at work. Maintaining a healthy relationship that includes a healthy sex life will help employees stay happy and engaged in their work, which benefits the employees and the organizations they work for. Say it with me. Doi. Number three. This one's a little surreal. Here it comes. The word and noun, mom. I've written two books about my mom and our funny, weird relationship. I have a third one in the works. I went home to visit mom for Mother's Day and to get away from the nothingness that is Los Angeles. Sure, call me a mama's boy. I can take it. In fact, the comedian who wrote my foreword to the very first book I wrote, 101 Weird Conversations with Mom, even referenced that. Maybe because I'm an only child, but I don't mind that label. They say you can judge a man on how he treats women by how he treats his mother. Now, I've never been a parent. But someone asked me what my favorite word is, and I didn't even pause. Mom. I love saying it. Being a mother and a mom are indeed two different things. There's a time and a place to be a mother, and a time and a place to be a mom. I can't think of a more important job. Nothing against fatherhood, of course. That's equally important. But moms are the tiebreakers because they do the birthing. And when I talk about my mom, I get instantly happy. I've never been in a bad mood, a sad mood, or had a negative thought when it comes to my mom. And I realize not everyone is as lucky as I am, but the word mom, to me, is nothing but pro. I know Mother's Day has passed, but man, I've had some good things happen to me in my life with career, women, life experience, money, and plenty of bad things or horrific things with career, women, life experience, money, etc. But the one thing that I feel I've done right or damn close to it is foster and nurture my relationship with my mom and the respect and admiration I have for moms everywhere. So despite Mother's Day being over, moms everywhere, the good ones anyway, your pros. Amateur Nation, it's not just a podcast, it's a movement. Go to Amazon to download my book at a 45% discount. Amateur Nation, the decline of common sense, manners, and social skills. And that discount stays in place until the quarantine is 100% lifted nationwide. Email me your thoughts, lou@lousantini.com. Call the Amateur Nation hotline, 818-351-9263. Subscribe to my YouTube channel. Remember, amateurs, we see you. You're not at home. Don't do life wrong. Go pro. Don't be an amateur. For Amateur Nation, I'm Lou Santini, and this has been a big major production.